8 past 7, and today marks a year since the Lindt Cafe siege. We were on air at that time in the drive show, and it was quite an extraordinary thing for Australia to experience. Many people, some hours into this, still couldn't believe it was happening. Premier Mike Baird and Police Commissioner Andrew Scipione will visit the cafe this morning. The anniversary will be commemorated at a twilight ceremony in Martin Place tonight. The Lindt Cafe building will also be lit up for 5 nights with projections of that amazing floral tribute and the thousands of messages laid at the site in the aftermath. One of the hostages, Marcia McHale, spoke to Channel 7 last night. She told reporter Chris Reason that she still has shrapnel in her feet and that she struggled to cope. Here's a bit of what she had to say.
The pieces of shrapnel still lodged there. See,
still there?
They're still there. Some of them are lodged onto the bones of my feet. I just didn't realise how difficult it was going to be. Depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts. I have been diagnosed to have PTSD. I want everyone, I guess, to know and understand that we can't let evil win.
Now, Chris Reason, who gave that interview, was on air throughout the entire siege. You may recall he was inside the Martin Place studios with police snipers, and he joins us on the line now. G'day, Rezo. What do you remember most about that day?
Oh, mate, for me it was an extraordinary day. Good morning, Bill. Andrew, I just got back. It was my first day back after 6 months of long service leave. I'd been at Channel 7 25 years, walked in the door at 9 o'clock in the morning, and 40 minutes later, the story began that really has changed the city and certainly affected my life as well. But it was an extraordinary day back then.
Can you give us a bit of insight into what it was like to be embedded, as you were, with the police snipers in the Channel 7 building during the siege?
And I couldn't believe they'd let us back in. It was an extreme act of faith from the police to allow Greg Parker, my cameraman, who did exceptional work that day.
He did.
His eye was to the eyepiece for just about the duration of the 15 hours he was in there. I was living there later in the afternoon and joined Greg with the sniper on that fourth floor, the sunrise level, which looked directly down through the sawing glass windows at the front of Channel 7, 30 metres away into the Lindt Cafe. We could see everything very, very clearly. It was an extremely beneficial vantage point for the police. And when I first walked in, that was the thing that first struck me. I couldn't believe how clear it all was. The camera was able to easily pick out the hostages in the front part of that building and through the window, and, of course, Man Morris himself. And we were instantly able to clarify some of the misinformation that had been going around all day. We'd been dealing with reports of 50 people in there. Well, quickly we realised it was somewhere around 15, and we were able to individually isolate each sort of face and person there. Those pictures that Greg was pumping out were not going live. We weren't going to do that. The police insisted that wasn't allowed to happen, and none of the live crosses I did were allowed to show the police operations in the background. But where they were going, they linked that camera guys up to the police command post just down the road. And so they were making tactical, critical decisions about what was happening that day from Greg's camera. And, as you know, it all went through that entire evening through to that awful conclusion at around 2:14 a.m. on the Tuesday morning.
You've spoken to a number of people connected to the siege recently. We just heard your interview there with Marcia, and you also spoke on Sunday with Tori Johnson's mother, and that's the first time she's spoken. How are they all coping a year on from the ordeal?
Ange, not well, still not well at all. Look, talking to Rosie Canaan, who's Tori's mum, was really difficult. She battled with that. She wanted to go on the record to basically talk about Tori. She thought that not enough had been said about him. She wanted to make some remarks at this anniversary time. But she said there is a massive hole in her life she hasn't been able to fill. They're extremely close, the two of them. And she's been suffering every day. Not a day goes by when she doesn't think about it. She and he used to love gardening, love flowers. Every day, she says, he would pick flowers for her, press them for her and present them to her. And he was a little boy. He kept doing it throughout adulthood as well. His favourite flower was a sunflower. She's been growing those in the backyard for the last couple of months, and they're flowering perfectly just in time. In this last 48 hours, she's going to cut a few down, and each member of the family is going to take one today to the memorial service tonight with her and lay them down there in honour of Tori. She goes down to that garden every day to think about him and can't stop thinking about him.
And as Angela and I discussed yesterday, and for some of us, we can only imagine this, that it's one thing losing a loved one, but Rizzo in such a public event, you then have to bear, in some ways, a responsibility to tell that story, be part of the story, and not be able to just go away and grieve privately. That's been another difficult aspect to this.
Yeah, well, everybody's reactions, 18 hostages that day night, Bill, and all of their reactions very, very different. And it's been fascinating to watch how they've each dealt with it. I mean, Rosie wanted to have no contact with the media and has made that very clear from day one. But in the last week, I was talking to another family member and they said, look, she would actually like to come forward. She wanted to say something about Tori. She wanted to put some of the record on some of his history, his personality, his extraordinary, what she called his extraordinary contribution to their world on the record. And she felt better for doing it, and she loved the piece at the end of the day. But, look, you know, it's everybody was different, and some of them still haven't spoken. Julie Taylor, who was one of Katrina's best friends, pregnant at the time, and as you know, has now given birth to a beautiful baby daughter and named that daughter in honour of Katrina, Emily Katrina, she's called her. She hasn't spoken yet. A couple of the others haven't spoken either, but mothers have, you know, spoken out very loudly, very, very clearly. There was a lot of debate about the payments paid by television stations as well for some of those interviews. Some didn't get paid. So, look, a range of different approaches from each of those 18, and they're all dealing with it in the way that they know how best to deal with it.
Very, very moving moment occurred. I was at Oprah Winfrey's show at All Phones Arena in Sydney on Saturday night, and Louisa Hope was in the audience, and Oprah had met with her before the show and said what an inspirational woman she was and the messages of hope that she had coming out of that dark time. And after she said that, the 12,000 people in the arena stood up and gave Louisa a standing ovation, and I don't think there was a dry eye in the house. It was quite incredible. The coroner investigating the siege has issued a public statement this morning justifying, if you like, the length of the inquest into the siege. He says that the families of Katrina Dawson and Tori Johnson deserve to know if their deaths could have been avoided. There's been a bit of a criticism of the scale of the inquest. What do you make of it?
Yeah, look, it was an extraordinary statement from the coroner. We got a copy of it yesterday. It was embargoed till midnight last night, and we can now talk about it. And look, I mean, he wanted to put on record his sympathies for the families and for the hostages, the survivors, and indeed the first responders, as we now call them, the police, the paramedics that were involved that night. And also to thank his staff, who have done an extraordinary amount of work, Ange, to get the investigation to this level. As you well know, the coronial inquests don't usually start for years until after an incident, but this one they needed to start quickly because there were so many critical national security issues surrounding what happened back in December 15, and the community want those answers, want to know what went wrong with every level of the system, from the very fact that Man Monis was let into the country, how his progress developed, his crime background developed, the fact that he was off and on watch lists, why wasn't he on a watch list at the time, and why weren't those warnings, those phone call warnings to the National Terror Hotline in the days just before the incident happened, listened to and acted on? Those important questions the coroner wanted to answer. Look, it takes time, though. We've seen three public instalments now of the inquest. There's one big one left to go. I think it starts April next year, and it runs for a minimum of 8 weeks, and the coroner's made it clear that he wants to report before the end of next year, and everybody's waiting on those answers.
Well, it is, thankfully, at this stage, an exceptional case which demands exceptional treatment. I think everyone agrees with that, and regardless of whatever criticisms have taken place, those criticisms even create more reason for spending time on getting this right. The other thing that's appropriate, though, Chris, is the memorial itself, and I think we've discussed some of the things. Mike Baird basically summed it up for everybody on Sunday. I thought his words were outstanding. And talk us through what will happen today, and just how this will be commemorated.
Well, Bill, from 8:15, the public ceremony will start. Everybody's invited if you want to go down there. There's big screens being erected up and down Martin Place for those who can't get quite close enough to Lindt Cafe. The area immediately in front of the cafe has been sealed off for the dignitaries and for the hostages and for the various representatives of the emergency services that will be down there as well. It's going to be quite emotional, mate. They're, as you sort of hinted in your introduction, they've got hundreds and hundreds of photographs of that extraordinary floral tribute that blanketed Martin Place last December, and they're going to broadcast, beam some of those photographs onto the building itself, the Lindt Cafe building, and the buildings all around, just like they do in Vivid Festival, you know, when they light up the sails of the Opera House. The same thing down here. It's going to run for each night up until midnight, up until Saturday. There'll be a lot of road closures, pedestrian access denied as well around that area. So there's going to be some city chaos involved at all. As for the memorial, well, that was unveiled on Sunday, the permanent memorial, and it caught a lot of people by surprise. It's beautiful for its simplicity. A series of 400 small hardened plastic glass-like cubes, and in each of them a little flower that's going to basically replicate that floral tribute from last year. They're going to be scattered across Martin Place, inlaid into the granite tiles across that entire zone. And the light inside, they'll be backed by small mirrors. The light inside should reflect and shine both at night and during the day from the sun. So, look, it's going to be good. I mean, there was one interesting thing that Marcia McHale said to me yesterday. She loved the idea, loved the concept, but when she saw the fact that those things were on the ground and that everybody would be walking on them, and, you know, she wondered whether it was quite respectful enough to be placing them the way they did. So there hasn't been universal acclaim for the idea from the architect, but... Look, that sort of thing's
a very personal thing, though, isn't it? It's very hard to create a memorial tribute that satisfies everybody. I think we all have different feelings about these things, don't we?
I think so, and I think they grappled with all of those things. Mm. And this is what they came up with. I think it'll be moving. It'll be not too in your face. You know, I worried at one stage there was going to be soaring statues and things like this. Mm. But look, I think, you know, just gentle reminders is what we need, and we need permanent ones. And I think this is a good balance. I think they've pretty much got it right.
Well, Chris Reason, we'll let you go because you clearly have a big day ahead covering all of what is going to take place. Thanks for sharing your memories today, though. And I know it must have taken a big toll on you too to be reporting through all of that. And again, thanks for sharing that with us today.
Not Chris Reason. Always a pleasure to talk.
Thanks, mate.